Matthew chapter 27. Early in the morning, all the chief priests and the elders plotted against Jesus to put him to death. They put him in chains, led him, and handed him over to Pilate, the Roman governor. When Judas, who betrayed him, heard that Jesus had been condemned, he repented himself. It means he rethought. Doesn't mean he was necessarily sorry, he just thought again. And he returned the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and the elders. "I have sinned in that I have betrayed innocent blood," he said. "We don't care about that," they replied. "That is your problem." Judas threw the coins down in the temple and left, went off and hanged himself. So remember how Judas went to them to start with and said, "What will you give me? And I will betray Jesus unto you." So although he may have had various motives, he was motivated by money. And I think that's why he throws down these 30 coins with so much anger. He realizes, "I did the most awful thing that could ever be done in the whole world. I betrayed the perfect Son of God to death for money. And actually not a very large amount of money. 30 pieces of silver was the value, really, of a slave. Now, they sold Joseph into Egypt for 20 pieces of silver. So it wasn't a huge amount of money. So the chief priest picked up the coins and said, "This is the price of blood. It would be against the law to put it into the temple treasury." So they took advice as to what they should do, and they used the money to buy the potter's field as a cemetery for foreigners. That's why that field is called Akaldamar, which means in their language the field of blood, to this very day. So all they could do was to buy a plot of land that was called the Potter's Field because it was muddy. You couldn't really build a house on it. So all it could buy was a muddy field that couldn't really be used for building and couldn't just be used for anything else really apart from getting some mud out of it to make clay things or for burying strangers in. So that's all his bit of money could buy. And people do the same today. They say, "Oh no, I'm getting another job. Oh yeah, I've got too many things I want to do in this life. I haven't got time to go to church. I haven't got time for God. I haven't got time to read the Bible." Because they're looking for money. And how pathetic is it? At the end of it, what have you done? You've thrown away the fact that Jesus poured out his blood for you, all because you wanted money, because you just wanted to buy a few extra things in your life. How sad, how tragic. But that's what people do. They effectively do what Judas did and betray Jesus for money. So the important thing is not to be covetous, because then you don't need all this money, because you're not coveting all the things that you think that money can buy. And thus they fulfilled the words of Jeremiah the prophet. They took the 30 silver pieces, the price that the people of Israel valued him for, and they cast it to the potter, as the Lord commanded me. Jesus then stood before the Roman governor, who asked him questions. He asked, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "You say that I am," replied Jesus, but he said nothing in response to all the accusations by the chief priests and elders. Pilate therefore said to him, "Do you not hear all these things they accuse you of?" But Jesus refused to answer a single word, so that the governor marveled greatly. His self-control was absolutely amazing. He was amazed. People just couldn't believe that Jesus could be so provoked but say nothing. And is a great example for us all the way through, that he was self-controlled when he was provoked. Every year at Passover, the Roman governor had a tradition of releasing one prisoner whom the crowd asked for. And at that time, there was a well-known prisoner called Barabbas. When the crowd had gathered together, Pilate asked them, "So, which one do you want me to release to you? Barabbas or this Jesus who is called the Christ?" He knew very well that the Jewish authorities had handed Jesus to him because they were jealous. And as soon as you get involved in any kind of jealousy complex, You're unfortunately getting yourself on the side of those who killed Jesus. We mustn't be jealous. And jealousy does awful things. As Solomon says, jealousy is cruel as the grave. It's jealousy that leads to so much grief. And if we're secure in who we are and we're confident of the love of God and the love of Jesus, you don't need to be jealous, because you are loved. And you don't need to be jealous that this one or that one has got more than me. When Pilate was sitting in the judgment hall, he got a message from his wife. Don't have anything to do with that just man, because in a dream I suffered very much because of him. And the tradition has it that she became a Christian. The chief priests and elders persuaded the crowd to ask Pilate to release Barabbas and to have Jesus put to death. But Pilate asked the crowd, which one of these two do you want me to release to you? Barabbas, they all shouted. What then shall I do with Jesus, who is called the Christ? Pilate asked. They all replied, crucify him. But Pilate asked them, but what crime has he done? But they started shouting even louder, crucify him. When you ask people for a reason, when they're doing something wrong, they just repeat their conclusion louder. When Pilate saw that there was nothing to be gained by continuing, and indeed that a riot could break out, he took water, washed his hands in front of the crowd, and said, I am innocent of the blood of this just man. You see to it. And the whole crowd replied, his blood be on us and on our children. Then Pilate released Barabbas to them, and after he had whipped Jesus, he handed him over to be crucified. Well, Pilate in history is recorded as a man who had absolutely no conscience. And yet in the Bible, he comes over as a man who's very concerned, and his conscience is really getting the better of him. Why was this? Well, it's because a man may generally have no conscience, but when he's confronted by the cross of Jesus and by Jesus personally, this triggers the conscience. The beep beep of conscience goes off in people. That's why when you preach the cross of Jesus to people, this really does, even if they don't show it, they act all tough like it, they think it's stupid, this actually touches their conscience. Then Pilate's men took Jesus into the governor's palace, and the whole company of soldiers gathered around him. They pulled off his clothes and put a scarlet robe on him. They were dressing him up like he was a king. Then they made a crown out of thorns and placed it on his head. Now, the thorns in the crown, which I'm sure they pushed down on his scalp, would have caused him to bleed, because just beneath the scalp, there is a very sensitive set or network of nerves. And if they're punctured, lots of blood will come out. So he would have had blood pouring down his back. There would have been a lot of blood around. They put a stick in his right hand. They're dressing him up as if he's a king. And then they knelt before him and mocked him. Hail, King of the Jews! They spat on him, they took the rod and hit him over the head. When they had finished mocking him, they took the robe off from him and put his own clothes back on him. And then they led him out to crucify him. So there would have been blood absolutely everywhere, including on his clothes. His clothes, his own clothes, would have been soaked with blood. And this was all for us. This is what you've got to keep remembering, that this was for our sakes, that Jesus did this for us, because we sin. We all sin. That's why he did this. And he did it, as Paul said, the Son of God loved me and gave himself for me. Well, as they were going out, they met a man from Cyrene called Simon, and the soldiers made him to carry the cross of Jesus. They came to a place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. It could mean the skull of Goliath. Gol means skull. Could be Gol Goliatha, the skull of Goliath. You remember David cut off the head of Goliath and took the head back to Jerusalem. Well, so it seems that's what he did with it, and a head becomes a skull. So that's what it could have been. And there they offered Jesus wine mixed with something to take the pain away. But after he realized what it was, he wouldn't drink it. So Jesus didn't want to take any painkiller. And why didn't he want to do that? Surely our salvation would have worked out, even if he had. Just so that no one can ever say, Jesus doesn't know how I feel. He went through all this with no painkiller. They crucified him and then divided up his clothes among them by throwing dice. After that, they sat down and watched him there. And above his head was written his accusation, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Then they crucified two thieves with Jesus, one on the right and the other on his left hand. And those who passed by shook their heads and insulted Jesus. "You who were going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself if you're God's son. Come down from the cross." And he would have thought, maybe I could come down and then they would believe. But he knew that that was just justifying himself. And the temptations that he had in the desert, right at the beginning of his ministry, come down from the pinnacle of the temple and then people will believe. You see, he overcame that then, and now this is being repeated to an even stronger extent. In the same way, the chief priests and the teachers of the law and the elders laughed at him. "He saved others, but he can't save himself. Is he not the King of Israel? If so, if he comes down from the cross, we will believe him. He trusted in God. He claimed to be the Son of God. Let us see then if God truly wants to save him." And the thieves who were crucified threw the same insults at him. Amazing thing was that one of those thieves at the very end repented. And even though he'd been cursing Jesus just hours before, it's never too late to repent. And that's the wonderful message of the thief on the cross. At noon, 12 o'clock, the whole land was covered with darkness for 3 hours. And about 3 o'clock, Jesus cried with a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" I think there you see Jesus at his most human. He calls God, my God. And he feels that God has forsaken him. Well, God has not forsaken those who love him. But that's what it felt like to Jesus. And so that's how it can feel to us. But the silence of God and the distance of God is only apparent. It seems God is silent. It seems God is distant, but he isn't. And Jesus on the cross had the same problem. He felt forsaken by God, although he wasn't. Some of the people standing there heard him and said, "He's calling for Elijah." One of them, "Well, why do they say he's calling for Elijah?" Well, he says, "Eli, Eli," or "Eli, Eli." And when he says, my God," and that would have been rather similar to Eliyah, Elijah. Now, because Jesus was in the crucified position with his arms, I guess, above his head, it would have been very difficult for Jesus to speak. And he was very thirsty. That's why he says, "I thirst." So he probably didn't say it very loudly, and I'm sure those guys had beaten out every one of his teeth, so he would have had no teeth left. So it would have been very difficult for him to speak clearly. So they mishear Eli, Eli as Eliyah. One of them ran at once, took a sponge, soaked it in cheap wine, put it on the end of a stick, and tried to offer it to Jesus. But the others said, "No, let's wait and see if Elijah will come and save him." Jesus gave a loud cry and breathed his last. Jesus himself said, "No man takes my life from me, but I give it of myself." And I think that's significant that in one sense they didn't murder Jesus. He died by breathing out his last breath as a conscious act. That's the significance of it. And this curtain that was, or the veil that was in the temple, was torn in two from the top to the bottom as if God had done this. So the way into the most holy place was now open. Everybody, because of the death of Jesus, could come directly into fellowship with the most holy God. And there was an earthquake, and the rocks split apart, the graves opened, and many of God's people who had died were resurrected. They came out of the graves, and after Jesus had risen from the dead, they went into the holy city and appeared to many.
When the centurion and the soldiers with him who were watching Jesus saw the earthquake and all that was happening, they were terrified and said, "Truly, this was the Son of God." There were many women there watching from a distance who'd followed Jesus from Galilee and ministered to him, among whom were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the wife of Zebedee. When it was evening, a rich man from Arimathea called Joseph, who was also a disciple of Jesus, went before Pilate and begged for the body of Jesus. Well, only close relatives could be given the body. And so he's really saying that, look, this man is my relative. And I don't think that Joseph of Arimathea believed that Jesus was going to resurrect. He simply did this because he was motivated by watching Jesus dying, and he thought, no, now I'll sacrifice anything. I'm not looking for a future reward. I'm going to sacrifice anything for him. And so this is how it should be with us. Not that, oh, I'll be good so that I might get into the kingdom, so much as, wow, he died for me. If he did that, I'm going to give all I can for him. So Pilate gave orders for the body to be given to Joseph. So Joseph took the body, wrapped it in a new linen sheet, and placed it in his own tomb, which he had only recently had dug out of the rock, and rolled a large stone across the entrance to the tomb, and he left. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were sitting there facing the tomb. The next day was a Sabbath, and the chief priests and the Pharisees met with Pilate and said, "Sir, that deceiver, while he was still alive, said, 'I will be raised to life after 3 days.' So command then that his tomb be carefully guarded until the third day, so that his disciples won't be able to steal the body, and then go round telling the people that he was raised from the dead. And then the last error shall be worse than the first." Pilate told them, "You have a guard of soldiers under you. Go and make the tomb as secure as you can." So they left and secured the tomb. They put a seal on the stone, and they set the guards to watch.